Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another Wednesday night edition of Sports Conversation on the Fight Network. I'm Don Henderson. We had a great group of guests tonight. A lot of baseball to talk about, a lot of sports to talk about. And, of course, Roy is always in Tampa where things are really down a little bit the last couple of days. And Roger Hendler is in Philadelphia. We'll go with the rest of the guests as the show goes on. Our executive producer is always Frank Carroll. Frank, have you got any comments before we start the show?
Yeah, Don, on Wednesday, the 11th, we'll be having the 80th anniversary of a Veterans Day. And these are very important people in our lives. These are people that saved our lives, that have been out there in the front and running where we would run away from, or other people, saving other people, saving other countries. For those who have returned, we thank you for your service. For those the families who lost someone, the Gold Star families, we can never repay you what you've lost. We can never say thank you enough. and for all those chaplains that were out there that jumped on the aircraft, that jumped, that went to the scene, everything like that. We appreciate you, your loyalty to both your faith, your flock, and the United States of America.
Amen.
All right, Frank, well said. No question about that. They're the people that saved the country, and we'll continue as we go along. And let's go down to Tampa because sort of a sad couple of days in Tampa, Florida. The Rays had played so well from the outset of the season, setting team records and league records for wins in a row. But things came to an end at the end of the season, and Roy's with us right now in Tampa, covering those Tampa Bay Rays as always in Tampa. Ron, I don't know what to say. They just couldn't do anything right.
Boy, you're absolutely right. They couldn't do anything right. Defensively, yesterday in particular, they were unable to make plays that they made all year. They made plays that were unconscionable, or they tried to do things defensively that, you know, they never would have tried at any other point. You know, just bad decision making defensively. The at bats were terrible. You know, it wasn't until seventh to eighth inning today that they finally got a run, and you know, and that ended a string of about 31 innings going back to the end of the regular season where they were just struggling with the bats. And anytime that happens, especially getting into the playoffs, you know, you're in deep because obviously you're going to be facing you know, the best you know, an opposing team's best pitcher and some of the best pitching in baseball, clearly, because of some of the best teams in baseball. But just didn't look anything at all like the Rays that we saw very early in the season. And really not even, you know, didn't even look like the Rays that we saw down the stretch. I mean, that team obviously faded a little bit. Injuries had a lot to do with that, I think. I don't think that's an excuse. I think it's just a reality. But they, you know, they were still, you know, healthy. The team that you know, finished off solid at the end of the season was there. And they had their best pitcher on the mound in Tyler Glasnow yesterday. And he was just okay. Bullpen was, you know, really not that great, but the defense was just horrible yesterday. And by the time they got to today, the momentum was already, you know, on the side of the Rangers, and Texas just took a hold. I'm not sure which was, you know, more disappointing, the play of the Rays or the show of the fans and the fan base here in Tampa Bay. 20,000 fans, you know, each game just looked terrible. Just look terrible, guys. And, you know, Rays, there's some people here in Tampa, you know, arguing that, well, you know, middle of the day, 3 o'clock, people aren't going to take their kids out of school. Well, you know what? This is the kind of thing you do take a day off from work from. This is the kind of thing you do take your kids out of school for. I mean, it's, I'm not saying that everybody has to do it, but nobody else has had any trouble filling up their stadiums. And, you know, Minnesota started a game just an hour later. I don't think 4 o'clock makes that big of a difference. It's just another indictment on Tampa Bay as a sports town, at least as a baseball city.
Well, and Bruce Bochy was able to turn his club around. They died over the weekend, losing three in a row, which took them out of the first spot in the American League. As you take a look at it, but Bruce Bochy's had a great career as a manager. He got him back and got him on the winning track. And you took the second part right out of my mouth. The second part of this story is they're talking about putting a new stadium up. They're talking about all these things in Tampa, Florida. They had 19,704 yesterday. They announced the official attendance in the eighth inning today, but I did not pick up the official attendance. But it looked to me to be a very, very equivalent to what they had yesterday. So, to me, not an indication of what baseball is really needed in St. Petersburg. That's my personal opinion. Let's go to Philadelphia, where it's just the opposite. Roger was there last night. The Phillies struggled a little bit. And the end, as they always do, when Wheeler goes seven, and then they go to the bullpen. But what a crowd they had, and what a game they had.
Well, it certainly was, and very exciting, and as usual, and everybody was on their feet, and me with bad knees. I get blocked by all the people standing up in front of me because I can't get up every time. But, Roy, I wanted to get back with you and Don and Frank. The Rays were getting some bad national publicity yesterday from Chris Russo. And it was just about the lack of fan support, number one, but also that the Rays have had trouble in the postseason. And I guess a caller called in about the, the manager may go to the Mets. And then Chris said he did not think that was possible. Then the fellow brought up about a trade, prospects for Greg Council. And I was wondering what your feeling is about this, but that's what his point was, that they really can't handle a new ballpark when they're only going to draw for a playoff game, no matter what level, 19,000, 20,000.
Yeah, I can't disagree at all with anybody criticizing Tampa Bay as a sports town right now because of the lack of attendance at these two playoff games. Look, this was a premier matchup. Two teams that obviously have been hit by injuries, very similar like teams, in that respect. I mean, obviously the Rangers have a little bit more, hitting prowess, I think, than the Rays, but still the Rays had a 30 home run hitter, and look, two very attractive teams. Bottom line is two very attractive teams, and how attractive does the opponent have to be? It's a playoff game. You've got to be there. I mean, you don't have to be there, but you would think that in a community of 3 million people, Tampa Bay, that you would get 35,000 people to go to the game and see the playoffs. It didn't happen, and it's nothing new, really. I mean, they've struggled always to get fans. Their attendance was up a little bit during the regular season this year, but, it didn't show up today and yesterday, and it's kind of an embarrassment. And, it just solidifies the mistake that they're making in attempting to build a new stadium on the same, in the same place that this one is now. It's just, if you don't know Tampa Bay, it's too hard for too many people to get to. It's, it's very hard to get to from anywhere, from three quarters of the community. It's very hard to get to. And that's the biggest reason people don't go, because the Rays have very good television ratings. Radio ratings are good. They are a very popular team here in Tampa Bay. But fans just don't want to go to the ballpark. I don't think it has much to do with the park itself anymore as the location. Look, the park is no fun. It's a dead atmosphere. It always is. It's very, very, it's kind of fake. They try to, create crowd noise and things like that, try to make it fun, but it's not. It's just a dead atmosphere. There's nothing around around the ballpark. Even though they have plans to try to, build up the area, I just think that going forward, it's not going to make a difference. They may have a new stadium, but it's not going to draw any new fans, really. Certainly after the first couple of years, it won't. And it's going to be unfortunate. Look, if for the Rays to truly survive and thrive, for the Rays to thrive and bring in fans that will allow them to compete for some top-level free agents and make a little bit more money and, be a little bit more financially viable in free agency and things like that, and competitors, compete with, other teams to retain their own players. They've got to build a stadium that's going to, get filled up and that people want to go to. It's got to be a destination. It's got to be a thing, and that's going to have to be in Tampa. So who knows if this changes the approach? I don't think it does. I think they're pretty locked into staying in St. Pete. Boy, after this weekend, or this week rather, these last two games, if I'm ownership, I'm absolutely rethinking that whole thought process and saying, all right, maybe we need to look at Tampa one more time.
And of course, the biggest embarrassment of all may have been when you got to the sixth inning or seventh inning. I can't remember exactly whether it was the sixth or the seventh. They took the Rays off. They went to the other game because there just there wasn't any enthusiasm. There wasn't any interest, and they jumped over to the Twins game. And so we got to congratulate the Twins. They won in two straight over the Blue Jays. I thought Toronto had a very solid club, They jumped out 3-0 yesterday. The Twins came back and won it, and the Twins win it again today. So, again, congratulations to them. They won a big one. And, Roger, before we leave the playoffs, I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about the Phillies and their game tonight, because they're going to try to make it 2-2 against the Marlins and be three series where the two teams win in two games.
Yeah, well, they have the same starting lineup as last night, Don, and because there's a left-hander going on the mound that the Phillies have had pretty good success against, even though they've had some lack of success in previous years against the Marlins. But Kyle Schwarber's going to start and lead off, and then Trey Turner and Eric Bone and Bryce Harper, and right down the line, just like last night. And Christian Pache, is going to be in left field because of the right-handed bat versus Brad Marsh. So we'll see what happens. It was interesting last night that every player in the Phillies starting lineup had a hit. And that was the first time that happened since the Colorado Rockies game in the playoffs of 2009. And we all remember that season. So it's interesting. I mean, I think that they should win. Will they? I don't know. I mean, because the Marlins, I think, are a tough club. And like I said, they've had their number against the Phillies in the past. And I would say this, that thank goodness that some of the Marlins superstars pitching and field are not playing. And Josh Bell came through really strong last night. He looked really good.
Well, before we leave baseball and get to football, because Tampa has a little bit of a step up, because nobody expected the football team in Tampa this year on the professional level to jump out 3-1, which they've done. We'll talk about that in a second, but just a quick comment about the Yankees and what they're doing, or the Mets. I mean, Greg Cancel, do you think he's going to be the next manager? Is David Stearns going to make him the new guy to take over? The name that I saw on the post today, which surprised me a little bit, was Joe Madden. I hadn't heard anything about Joe Madden going back and managing again. Roy, we'll go to you first. You have any thoughts about who would be the next manager of the Mets?
Well, obviously money won't be an issue. They'll be glad to pay for whoever they can get. Look, first of all, I thought it was a mistake getting rid of Buck Showalter. I still don't understand that. You went out and paid a whole bunch of money for a lot of agent free agents, and they didn't come through the way you hoped they would. And so you blame the manager. I don't know that makes any sense, but I don't think it was on him. But so I'm not sure you can do much better than Buck Showalter. But one way I think you could do better than Buck Showalter is to get Joe Madden. I think that's something Joe Madden would probably be interested in. I think Joe Madden still has managing in him. I don't think he's ready to give that up. I don't think he liked the way it ended in L.A. I know he didn't really like it, all that much the way it ended in Chicago, even though he had something to say about, moving away from there. But I think that would be a good spot for him. But I think Joe Madden is smart, too, and I think he's going to look at the farm system and say, okay, well, where are we? How close are we? I know we've got some pieces here, but we've got to hold on to those pieces, too. What are we doing, at shortstop? What are we doing at first base? Are we keeping Pete Alonso? What are we doing in the outfield? You got some players who are, on the, getting up in age and their abilities are starting to wane a little bit. So you might be looking at a tear down and a rebuild at this point.
Well, let me just jump in to say they've already announced, Roy, they've already announced that they are going to maintain, he hit 46 home runs this year, and he still has 1 year remaining on a contract. So it looks like he's a definite stay, and they're going to put off making an extended contract offer or trading him until the end of next year. Roger, your thought also, Joel Sherman had a great piece today in the Post about Buck Showalter going over to the Yankees and becoming the leading force from an executive standpoint in the Yankees, because he knows the farm system so well. He knows the organization so well, formerly worked for the organization, and Joel had a lot of great points in the post today that he may be the right guy to hire as your executive producer, so to speak. Roger?
Well, I think that's a great idea, and they're exactly right. And, you know, before he went back into managing, he was terrific on MLB Network. And
right.
The guy I look at, you know, that won't surprise me, he winds up back in the administration with a team or in the baseball park is Ruben. He still keeps his tabs on everything. I think he does a tremendous job as an analyst. And I was watching the pregame show, and he really brings a lot to the table. He really is. And, he was a successful general manager. He was a player, even went back, I think, to the Red Sox, didn't he? He's like a first base coach or something 1 year. So you never know. I mean, I think they have to go with somebody that's got experience in the situation with Rob Thompson, the success with the Phillies, and Brian Snicker, a worker with the Braves. And then, as Chris Roos mentioned, look at Dusty, okay, what he with Houston. And at Bruce Bochy coming back to Texas and what he did first. Hey, let's bring back the senior citizens as managers.
Well, let's jump now because, Roy, at least a little bit of a surprise to me. The Bucks have gotten off to such a terrific start at 3-1. And more importantly, the game they played against the Eagles went right down to the last drive when the Eagles took an offensive thrust and went right down the field and scored and won the game. But I don't think anybody expected, that Tampa Bay was going to get off to a successful start as they have. What you're right there, you're covering the team. What do you think?
Yeah, I would say that outside of Tampa Bay, that was probably the case. Nobody really gave them any credit and figured that they would probably struggle more than anything, even out of the gate. But look, I look at the team and I thought all along that they're good enough to win their division. I think they're an 8-9-10. Before the season started, I thought they were an 8-9-10 win team. Based on the fact that they're going to face, play 6, 7, 8 games against their own opponents in their division, which are all fairly weak. And you look at the schedule and it's okay. It's not exceptional. You got the Bears on there, as we saw, and the Vikings. And so far what the Bucs have done is they've taken good advantage of their schedule. They've beaten the teams that they are capable of beating. I don't know if we should say they should have beat, but and then they obviously struggled against the Eagles. And there's no shame in that. But they've gone out and played very good football in 3 games against teams that are beatable and proven that they're a little bit better than those teams. The fact that all those teams are now below 500 or 500 below, I think it says something. But, again, you look at the Bucs' schedule, and it's not that, heavy laden with powerhouse teams, at least right now. You got the Bills on there. You got the 49ers on there. But other than that, they should not have a problem here, especially with 3 already, winning 8, 9, 10 games. And if they can do that, I think they can win the division because Carolina is proving to be what we thought Carolina would be. The Falcons are inconsistent, and the Saints are, a little bit they're struggling too. So I think the division is right there for Tampa Bay. I'm not surprised. Look, they're getting very good football out of Baker Mayfield. I think he's the biggest surprise. There's a lot of talent on this team, both sides of the football, but it's all about the quarterback, and this guy's come through, and so far he's playing his heart out, and he's impressing people. He's playing hard, and I think everybody's very excited about the way he's leading this team right now.
Roger, conversely, in Philadelphia, the Eagles have won all their games. They're playing well, but they certainly take it to the wire every game before they win it.
Yeah, they do. They haven't gotten the offense really in high gear yet. But I'll tell you what, the team that really is a shocker is the Giants. I mean, they don't look good at all. And now there's a lot of – you probably saw it, I guess, in the Post. I'm sure they had a lot. It's like in New York Sports Radio. about. They were fraud last year, and they were fortunate to win when they did. And maybe it is something that they obviously have problems with the offensive line to, you know, take care of the quarterback. But, you know, Washington looked pretty good against the Eagles. Maybe it shouldn't have. If they had not scored that, the Eagles had not scored that touchdown, A.J. Brown, you know, with a minute 40 to go, they could have run the clock down and would have kicked the field goal. But listen, you know, coaches do things, and they won the game. So, but they do.
Well,
I think the test will be this week on to Seattle.
Speaking about Washington, you know, I had seen Hal play a few games at North Carolina during his college career. He made the decision not to come out, to go back and take an additional year, thinking he would move up in the draft. It went just the other way around. He didn't play that well his extra year at North Carolina. He dropped down. I think he was a third-round draft. Roy would probably know better than I. I think he was a third-round draft. But anyway, against the Philadelphia Eagles, a couple of things. One, I'd like to get your comment on this. One, how he played against the Eagles and how he's played so far this season. Number two, how can a coach of the team, when he takes them down and gets a touchdown with 1 second to go in the game, on the road to tie it up and not go for 2 points? How are you going to win a game on the road as a visiting club when you're a big-time underdog and you don't go for the win? Roy, I'll let you comment first.
Who are you talking about?
Washington.
Ron Rivera.
Oh, look, I don't question
too
much what
he could have gone for the two, Roy. That was Don's point. Instead of going to tie for OT.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of time, I think more and more you're seeing teams say, well, look, the way the rules are now in overtime is everybody's going to touch the ball unless you give up a touchdown. I think if you feel, you know, confident in your defense, you know, you say, okay, look, take me to overtime. I'll take my chances there because your chances of winning there are probably just as good as getting a 2-point conversion. You know, give your team a rest, let everybody get a breath, and you know, see if you can win a coin toss and score a touchdown or play defense, take the ball away. I just think more teams are kind of going that direction the more we go in that area. So. You know, in those situations, so I don't question that. Even, no matter on the road or not, I don't have a problem with that. And as far as you know, the quarterback goes, well, look, there's been a lot of turmoil in Washington. You know, they're trying to piece it together, and we'll see if they can how well they can piece it together. There's no question that Dallas and the Eagles are the premier teams in that division right now. We're surprised at what the Giants have done so far. Not done, but I'm not that surprised at what Washington has done. I mean, they're struggling from leadership. They've had a pretty tumultuous offseason of their own doing. So, but I don't question Ron Rivera too often. I think he's one of the he's what I refer to as a professional head coach. There's ways to look, plenty of ways to look at it, but I don't necessarily mind a guy, you know, going for the tie, get me to overtime, and I'll take my chances there. Let's play some real football here. I don't have a problem with that.
Well, I'll tell you, you and I disagree every once in a while, and this is one I disagree. You're going against a team that's expected to go to the Super Bowl. You're in their building, and you've just your quarterback is just taking you in a minute 37 or 40 seconds, the length of the field with 1 second to go, scored a touchdown. And you got all the momentum in the world going for you, and you decide to forego all that and go for the overtime. Roger, I go back to you. I would never do that.
Well, I understand your thinking, but I also understand Roy's. And I think you have to look at the situation. You have to think of whether you have success. With the two-point conversion, the Eagles had a success. They also have a lot of success of getting first down first and one. You know, so it works way.
So, what are you saying again?
Hello?
Say it again. Hello.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, it's kind of gravelly, but go ahead. I'm listening.
Oh, no. Is this Roy Cummings?
No, no. That was not Roy.
Okay. Take care. All right, let's go back to Philadelphia right now. And, that's, of course, that's where Roger is as well. But Sonny Hill, an old partner of mine, we broadcast together for a number of years, and we've known each other for 100 years. And Sonny is, has always been and will continue to be connected with WIP. He does a show in the living room every Sunday morning for those people. Sonny, how many years is it now for the living room?
Well, welcome to my living room.
How many years?
There we go.
I'm celebrating my 37th anniversary.
37, there you go.
37.
Well, and Sonny, of course, has been involved in basketball his life, has the Sonny Hill League, had the played in the Eastern League, has been a part of the NBA and the 76ers for years in administrative capacity. And Sonny, nice to have you with us again. We're right around the corner for the beginning of the NBA. And I guess I'd have to ask you, the Eastern Conference, a lot of changes with the 76ers, a lot of changes with the Brooklyn Nets. The Knicks are making changes in and out. They were pretty competitive last year. Boston continues to be the cream of the crop. Your thoughts before we get to something else?
No, the NBA is always evolving. Interesting to see Leonard going to Milwaukee and then Drew Holiday going to the Boston Celtics. I think those two moves, I think they balance out from my perspective. I know a lot of people want to give Milwaukee an edge because of Leonard. The fact that Drew goes to the Boston Celtics, I think he rounds them off very well. Exceptional two-way player. Knows how to get other people involved. And I think from the Celtics' point of view, the ball's going to move a lot more, and the players are going to be able to play at a higher level.
Roger?
Sonny, I want to ask you, what's your opinion about Harden coming back to the Sixers? I heard today that he's in I don't know whether you caught me on that. No, I'm just wondering, what's your opinion of coming back to the Sixers? I never thought that he'd play another minute for the Sixers, but he's back in camp, I understand.
Well, he showed up today. So we're hoping that he and Morley can work out whatever their differences are. And if he can play and has the right attitude, I think it's on the air. Nick Nurse, what kind of an offense is he going to be able to run? And John, you're familiar with that with your basketball background. You can only run one offense if you have Harding. If you don't have Harding, then the ball moves more. He's a dominant player in terms of the shot clock and shooting, and the offense doesn't flow as well.
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's going to be very, very interesting in the East because, again, we're looking at the 76ers making some adjustments, and as you just pointed out, where's Harden going to be? The Brooklyn Nets, I know Simmons is a great friend of yours. You've worked with him since he was a young man. He went through training camp. He said this is the first time in 3 years that he's been 100% healthy and ready to go. You're in a better position to comment on that. You think he's ready to go, and is he going to make a full season?
I think that has yet to be seen. In reference to what Ben is going to be able to do, I think it's more mental than physical. Is he prepared to take the next step in his game, which is to shoot the ball? And if you're not making the shots. People are going to be oohing and aahing in reference to what's going on. So I think that if he can deal with that, he has the skills. His skills are exceptional. At 6'10", he can play five positions in the NBA in this era. There are very few players that have the diversity that he brings to the floor, plus his mental aptitude. He's a highly intelligent basketball player when he's playing at his highest level.
Sonny, would you say that the championship is going to remain where it was in 22? Or do you think there's a good chance that there is a little bit better competitive schedule at the top and it might go right down to the best of one or two teams?
No, I think people really do not give the Denver team the respect that they have earned. And reference to the Djokovic, in my years of watching NBA basketball and going all the way back to great George Mikan, which most people have no idea what I'm talking about, I've watched all of the great centers that have played this game. In my opinion, he's the most intellectual center to have played the game. The only one that I put in his category would be Sabonis. But when Sabonis came to the NBA, he wasn't the Sabonis that Wilt Chamberlain told me about when Wilt went to the Olympics and when Sabonis was playing with Russia and he was this young player. Wilt came home and told me, said, Sonny, this guy Sabonis, man, he is a tremendous basketball player. But we only saw a portion of it because of his health and his age by the time he got to Portland. But and Djokovic, you're talking about somebody that emulates some of the things that Sabonis was able to do.
Roger, you're up. I think you got a little something in the phone there, Roger. I don't know if it's with.
Yes, it is.
There's some interference that's in the background. It's not from Sonny. It's got something along the line. One of your coworkers at WIP is writing a book about the slam dunk. I'll tell you what, that'll be an interesting piece of literature I can't wait to read when it comes out in the future, because there was no one better than Wilt with that.
With what? With what?
Wilt with a slam dunk, and the dunker with a slam dunk.
Well, you know, when you start talking about Wilt, and these young folks want to write books and they want to try to, you know, talk to people about what goes on, they really don't have a real perception of the, and somebody in the background that's just running their mouth. I don't know what that is, but it's hard to watch that. It's hard to have a conversation with that interference in the background. I don't know what it is.
You're exactly right, Sonny. What we'll do is that we'll put it off right here, and we'll come back in next week or the week after when the season's about ready to start. When we got a much clearer line. I don't know where the interference is coming from. But thank you very much for the time so far tonight. It's always a pleasure, and keep that 38th year going at WIP.
Well, the main thing is you get well, my friend. Whatever I can do to kind of keep you in a situation where you're motivated and you're inspired, I'm always going to try to be there for you.
Thank you, man. You're the best.
All right, baby. Take care.
Okay. Sonny Hill, one of the outstanding basketball people, and, of course, those folks that have lived and been around the Philadelphia area. Sonny Hill grew up in the Philadelphia area. He's been a staunch contributor at Temple University, a staunch contributor in a number of other situations. And all we can say is, and what a great partner he was when we were broadcasting together for a number of years with Temple. And no one knows more about basketball. He was on the NBA. Obviously, most people know that are a little older. Sonny was one of the first color commentators on CBS radio and TV. And sorry we had a bad line and we couldn't because Wilt Chamberlain is his heart and soul. Anytime you can talk about Wilt, his great friend, he grew up with him, went to Overbrook. They're great. They were great pals when he was alive. And it's great to talk to him about Wilt. And unfortunately, we just had the bad line. So let me check in now with our executive producer, Frank Carroll, and see whether our next guest is ready to go.
Yeah, I've got a call into him right now. I will. I will let you.
You know, Don. Can you hear me now, Don?
Now I can hear you plain as day.
Okay, great. I'm just getting back the Phillies game's underway, and I think it's going to be interesting. Everybody seems to feel somebody, but a lot of the media seems to feel that even if lose tonight, they'll come back tomorrow night. I don't put it that way. I think that I was concerned until they finally won on Sunday to get that ninth win, because they lost four in a row since they clinched. Nola just struck out the first batter, the leadoff hitter, Miami. So I think if he comes near to what Wheeler did last night, that was a swinging strike. You saw that they'll be in good shape. And if we just have two strong pitchers, if they win tonight, they start kick off the division series in Atlanta. That is not going to be an easy case going against.
Well, as you said earlier, they've had their difficulty with Miami, but right now Nola in particular, his ERA is not great against Miami. However, his overall record and his ERA over the league and his strikeout totals are incomparable to a lot of other players. So, he just has not had great success at times against Miami. So we'll see what happens tonight.
Well, he has gave up a lot of homes this year. More than he ever given up. But, I'll be anxious to see if they will, but I just don't see anybody, to be honest with you, Don. They will go to the World Series. I think they're the best team in baseball by far, because with everything.
You're dropping out again, Roger, and also a lot of something in the background. I don't know if it's cross lines or what, but a lot of static in the background. So I don't know whether we could move you around a little bit and get you into another spot. We had the dog barking in the first segment. I don't know where that dog was coming from. But we're having some fun tonight, I'll tell you that.
I'm probably chasing Roger.
I'm gonna call him again, okay?
Okay, we'll see if we get Mike Schultz. Yeah. Is Mike Schulte up yet or not?
Not yet. He's, I got to call him. Yes.
Okay. We're going to talk college for the next segment. I'll just hold it on here until Roger gets reconnected and until Frank gets reorganized over at the other end of the control center. And a lot of great football has been played over the last couple of weekends. Some great football this weekend. Texas, Oklahoma in the Red River Raid contest. Texas for the first time up in the top three nationally and are 6.5-point favorite. Florida State obviously is going to take on Virginia Tech. A surprise. Florida State, who's had a terrific start on the season at 23-5. And I know Mike Schulte will tell us a great deal about that when he joins us. a college football expert, Alabama and Texas A&M. This one's a little bit closer than I thought. Texas A&M is a 2.5-point underdog. I know Alabama has really struggled in the early going, but I thought they'd be a little bit bigger favorite than that. Georgia is only a 14.5-point favorite over Kentucky. Kentucky has played some good football, and yet they play some shaky football. And, of course, Notre Dame went right down to the wire last Saturday night, terrific game on television, and finally wound up winning it. Navy put on a terrific show, and they're playing Louisville. They're a 6.5-point favorite there. And when Mike Schulte gets on, we'll talk about the bowl situation, which is way too early to talk about, but just to mention, because he's the executive director and has been for almost 35 years. So we'll chat about that a little bit, too. And
John, Mike's with us now.
Mike is with us now. Mike Schulte, good to have you with us. And I said a minute ago, some great games coming up this weekend, but also talk about some of the ones last week. I got to take exception with the first 3 weeks of the season. Other than the LSU game the first 3 weeks of the season, I didn't see very much to watch out there. But when you got to the fourth week, it was a lot better.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's something to be said. First of all, glad to be with you guys tonight. And, yeah, can you believe we're 5 weeks into the season almost? I mean, it's just crazy. So, I mean, there's been some good games here and there. And I think there's been, there obviously are some of those games where, they're pretty lopsided, based on the scheduling and so forth. But I think also you've been able to start to see a little bit about, what teams are made up. We've talked to, ad nauseum about, the transfer portal and the NIL situation and how that it changes the makeup of teams from year to year much more than it used to be. I mean, it used to be you just lose some kids to graduation, maybe have a couple go out early to the NFL, but, pretty much you knew what you had coming back, and then you sort of evaluate who the new guys and how quickly they could play. Now, of course, with the transfer portal, teams are, swapping players right and left all over the place, and it makes it real hard going into the season for folks on the outside, at least, to sort of know what kind of teams, their favorite team are. So, even when you play, teams that aren't big names or whatever on your schedule, you start to sort of evaluate, what you have, and as you start to get into conference play, which we've started to do now in the last week or so, obviously that's the real test. And so now that we're seeing a lot of conference matchups and so forth, you're really starting to see what's out there and who's for real and who's not.
Mike Schulte, our special guest, and Mike, just extending, that was my next question, which really beat me to it a little bit. The NCAA is now taking under consideration they want more clarity and transparency on what's happening right now, because so many of these kids are getting so much money in different areas from different people, and they're having a meeting, I believe. You'll know a lot more about it than I do. They're supposed to have a meeting, I believe, next Monday or Tuesday. It's next week, one day. I don't know which day. To try to clarify what they're going to allow from here on out. They're going to try to make some changes because it just isn't working.
Yeah, well, the NCAA threw their hands up going into the new NIL rule, a few years ago. They, from my understanding, they were supposed to be studying and were going to come out with a plan prior to the start of the NIL process. And instead they came out and said, well, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to wait and let the Washington, D.C. decide, the regulations. Well, there's two things there. Number one, anybody thinks that Washington, D.C. is a good source to fix anything is crazy, personally. That's my thought. But also the fact that you've got, the timing, obviously that was not something that Washington, D.C. or any legislature, or federal government or state government was ready to tackle. So NIL starts off July 1st of, a couple of years ago, and with no rules. And so you ended up with suddenly states trying to suddenly scramble to put together rules and as to how they were going to handle things, you know, what schools could do in their state. And then you ended up with all these different rules from different states, and a lot of states don't have any rules. And so, the horse followed the cart there big time, and they didn't know what the heck they were doing. So now they're trying to provide some semblance of order to it, but you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. So
right.
About all they can do is try and make sure the toothpaste doesn't get all over the bathroom, right? So they're just they are trying to, I guess, look at some parameters that they can use across the board that will make things a little bit more organized. And we'll see what they come up with, but it's going to be really hard and it's going to take time, because, when you've gotten to you sort of let everything go wild to start with, it's hard to get, those horses back into any kind of corral. And I don't know, how much they're going to be really able to affect things for the better.
Well, I think the one thing that affected this week and last week, maybe more than any other, and I don't want to get into the teams or anything, but there was one player that one University Alumni Association or the Boosters or whatever group you want to use are putting together seven people that are putting together substantial money. I mean, I'm talking about $200,000 and $300,000 to have a young fella come and play football at their school. Well, holy smokes. I mean, this is another world. And I just can't believe that the NCAA is going to continue to allow something like this to happen.
Well, again, I mean, there's certain things that the aspects of it, they can't stop at this point. They should have thought of that, a long time ago. And players, they should be able, my personal feeling, they should be able to capitalize on their name and image and provide, be able to make more money, money if they have the ability to do that in different ways. So, there's no issues there. The issue at hand is the fact that there's one of the issues that the NCAA can sort of help with is the fact that, education of the players, potentially doing some kind of a standardized kind of licensing as to who can provide money, who can manage these deals that are being offered to the kids, so that the kids don't get stuck in a bad situation and things of that nature. So I think that's what some of the schools are trying to do now, is they're trying to provide some kind of an order to the process. But at the end of the day, whether you have 1,000 alumni going into a collective and each putting in $100 a piece, or you got one or two donors that going into a collective and putting up a whole bunch of money, piece into this pot of money, it's still going to be money that's, going to the athletes. And again, if they're, as long as they're required to do, certain things to earn the money and so forth, and their ability to do that, then that's how the system is. So they just got to play, within the rules of the system. I think the tough part that the NCAA is going to have a hard time with, and should, in my opinion, personal opinion, just be worried about more than anything is the fact that you're not just in a situation where you have, let's go back to say a Tim Tebow, right? And he should be able to make money off of, when people buy his jersey, right? Because it has his name on it. So he should make a portion of the money, that kind of thing, right? So that, that's sort of, a general kind of thing that makes a lot of sense. But when you have people offering kids who have not signed with colleges and they're coming out of high school, say, and they're being offered money to go to a particular school, that's like a whole nother level, right? And that's sort of what the NCAA forever, going back decades, was trying to prevent, right? Is people paying kids to come to their particular schools.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
And so that's the part that is really, I think, you know, something that hopefully they can get a handle on, so that, you know, if a kid's at out of school and they're doing really well and they're you know, real popular and they have a big following, or they become a star player and they want to capitalize on that, then good for them, you know. But you know, paying kids, you know, coming out of high school and to determine what school they go to is you know, and doing it in a direct sense like what you're talking about is one of the areas that I'm guessing that they're going to try and figure out a way to try and tamp that down.
Well, let's get back to your bailiwick, which is actually
NBA, Don, they've had that problem with the NBA for years. You know, where you play 1 year and then in college, and then you can play in the NBA. Don,
I don't know exactly what Roger said, but
yeah, Roger, you're breaking up pretty bad there.
Okay.
Let me go back while we straighten that. Let me go back while we straighten that out and go back to your bailiwick, and that's football. Let's talk about let's talk about some of the teams that you've seen early going. For instance, Florida State. Boy, they played a terrific game earlier. I think it was the second game of the year, if I'm not mistaken. That was one of the really good games that were played in the first few weeks. It looks to me like we've got some teams now that are going to be really well balanced out, and it's not going to be a given for Alabama and Georgia and these schools to go to the national championship. Your thoughts on that, Mike?
Yeah, well, I think going back to what I started out saying, and you know, with the portal and the fact that you don't really know what a team's like until they play a few games or a handful of games against competition. I think, you know, one of the things that I've seen this year, to your point, you know, there's been a couple teams that seem like, you know, really, really, really strong, at least so far. That's what they seem. And one of them is Florida State. They've got most of their kids back. They picked up where they left off. They're playing really well. I mean, you know, they played a very close game against Clemson, but, you know, good teams win close games. So they're playing really well. Oregon, you know, same thing. There's how State's, you know, played well. So, you know, you've got a few teams out there that are sort of out there, sort of like the top cream of the crop kind of thing. But to your point, there's a lot of teams out there that have question marks. They maybe haven't played up to the level everybody was expecting them to. You know, obviously Alabama losing earlier in the year. But again, you know, remember, they only beat Texas by 1 point last year, and Texas quarterback last year got knocked out in the first quarter. So that's not a huge surprise, but, you know, then they didn't look quite as good in a couple other games as we're used to seeing. But again, I think that what you're seeing is just across the board, top to bottom, you're seeing a lot more parity in the sport. At least, you know, through the top 25, 30 teams, where, you know, there's not that many teams, maybe a couple, where you sit there and say, well, there's no way they're going to lose this week, you know, no matter who they play. I mean, there's, you know, it's almost like everybody can be beat out there. You know, nobody is, you know, there's just not teams that are fully dominating to the point where, you know, you don't think that there isn't a chance they couldn't be beat. So I think it's, in a way, it's pretty fun for the sport, because, as you mentioned, I mean, you're going to have potentially, you know, some, you know, in the playoffs this year, the 14 playoff, you may have four teams in there that haven't been in the playoff yet, or at least for a while.
Texas hadn't been anywhere near there since 2009. So, you know, right now they're number three, and this is the first time that they've really made an honest-to-God surge.
Yeah, well, like you said, Florida State's up there in the top where they haven't been in a number of years. And I'm just saying, you know, and that's not to say that Georgia won't be there, maybe Indiana or Ohio State or Michigan. But, you know, the point is, it's like, you know, when you look at these teams right now today, you know, five, six games in a season, you know, there's, like I said, in my mind, there's just not that many teams where, you know, when you're sitting there, you know, doing your poll each week on who's going to win, they're automatics no matter who they're playing. And then, now, you know, now all the rest of them you got to figure out. I mean, there's some games this week. I mean, Georgia hasn't looked all that great this year. I mean, they've won.
But almost lost last week.
They have not looked like the team, even in their wins, they have not looked like the team that they looked like the past 2 years. So they have injuries, and maybe that'll get fixed. But, you know, and in Kentucky, you know, they're looking, you know, pretty darn good. So that's going to be a heck of a matchup this week. I mean, the last 2 years, you would never have hesitated to pick Georgia going to beat Kentucky. But this year, I don't know, you know, and that kind of thing. So, and there's a lot of, as I'm saying, there's a lot of games like that. You know, LSU has sort of been up and down. You know, Ole Miss, you know, they're a really good team, but, you know, they've got, I think, you know, a couple losses, you know, and, you know, but again, they're a good team. I mean, so it's just really, I think, just really hard right now to determine, you know, who, you know, say the top four or five teams really are, or certainly past the top three teams. I think this weekend you're going to see a couple upsets in the top 10. Let's put it that way. And I think that the rankings are going to change quite a bit over the next 3 weeks from what they are today, those top 10 or 15 teams, because there's going to be a handful of those guys that probably aren't where they are now in the next few weeks, because
right,
the parity is just showing up too much. And, you know, these guys are going to war every week. There's not a lot of gimme games out there for anybody right now.
Mike, the one, has always been unrealistic to me. Notre Dame is always up there in the numbers. And yet, when it comes to playoff competition, it becomes obvious they're not quite a number 8 team or a number 7 team or a number 6 team. I think it's just the opposite this year. I think they do have a legitimate team. They I don't know what the ranking was. I don't have the paper in front of me. What are they, 8 or 9 today? I don't know what they are. But I think they are a legitimate team this year to compete up near the top someplace, as opposed to many other years where I disagree with that.
Yeah, well, and again, I mean, you know, yeah, they lost to Ohio State, but Ohio State, you know, they're ranked, what, number 2, you know, when they
right.
lost to them? I mean, you know, so, you know, I mean, you know, if you're number 10 and you're playing number 2, number 10 is supposed to lose, right? I mean, you know, the point is that you're right. I mean, they're a very good team. You know, I think that historically, I think the thing with Notre Dame not being in a full member of a conference, you know, their schedule isn't quite as strong as it probably could be if they were in.
Correct.
Obviously, if they're in
Correct.
The SEC or some, even the ACC, you know. So
what they won,
so
what,
think,
22 straight,
I think,
against ACC teams. I think it's 22.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think
well,
that's the number.
The point. Yeah, my point being is that, you know, they may be a little bit harder to discern how good they really are from year to year, you know, when they don't play in years, they don't play a high level high level teams, you know, highly ranked teams. And so, it makes it a little bit harder to discern how good they really are at the end of the season. But, you know, but you're right. I think they're a really good team. I think they can go a very long way this year, potentially. But they're also not to the point where if they don't play a really good game, they could get beat a couple times. You know, so they don't have the luxury of having a team, say, like Georgia was the last 2 years, or Alabama has been, recent years, where
right.
they can have an off game and they're still going to beat the guy, you know, the other guy, right? It's like that's what I'm saying, I guess, is that there's not a, I don't know if there's any teams out there right now that are to that level. It seems like, you know, the top five or six teams, you know, they're not going to lose unless they play each other, kind of thing, right? You know, and now it's sort of like, you know, every week you're sort of wondering if this is going to be the week that they slip up and maybe get beat. So I just go back to the parity. I think there's so much parity, and certainly if you take teams like 8 through 25, 30, those guys playing each other, I think every game is just about, you know, a toss up, you know, as to who's going to win. Just depends on who plays well that night, because the parity is so so extensive out there that everybody's going to have to fight every week. And it's going to be interesting to see where everybody lands at the end of the day. You know, a year ago, out of the top 25 preseason poll a year ago, 15 of those teams weren't even ranked at the end of the year. Okay. So,
right.
You know, that's how hard it is now. Again, going back to the portal and all that kind of stuff where you can change the look of your team very quickly for the positive or for the worse based on who comes and who leaves each year because of the portal. And so it makes it really hard to determine at the beginning of the year how good everybody is until they play, some games. And realistically, until they play probably, you know, three or four conference games or games against, you know, ranked opponents. That's when you really understand how good they really are.
Your bowl game's been at Raymond James now for how many consecutive years? I can't remember. You've worked for them almost every one, I guess. But they're also, we talked about at the end of last season a little bit, there's some changes in the selection. Maybe you go over on some of the changes that were made from the end of last year into this year and what your situation is as far as selected teams.
Yeah, it hasn't changed from last year, but we do have – so we have traditionally for over 25 years, we've matched Big Ten versus SEC in our game. And that's our main matchup this year, of course, as well. We do have a caveat in our contract where if a Big Ten team is placed in the Orange Bowl, then instead of a Big Ten team, we would choose an ACC team or Notre Dame, if available, in our game to play an SEC team. So that's the situation, you know, that occurs this year as well. So we could have North Carolina or Clemson or Notre Dame or Louisville or somebody like that game in place of a Big Ten team this year, just depending on how everything works out at the end of the season and so forth, and who is slotted by the CFP committee into the Orange Bowl. So a lot of good possibilities, in all the leagues, all three leagues that we're partnered with, and we're looking forward to a great game this year again, as we typically have, and we're looking forward to celebrating our 38th year here in Tampa.
And also your connection with ESPN, that's been a long range. All your associations with not only the sponsors but also with the networks carrying your games, and as you indicated, you know better than I, but I would say four or five of the last eight have gone down to the final drive or to overtime. I mean, almost every game that has been in your cycle has been a terrific game.
Yeah, we've had some really good games. We've had, I think, four or five overtime games. And then, like you said, we've had even more that went down in the final drive. Even last year, Mississippi State, the game was tied up. Mississippi State goes down, kicks a field goal with literally seconds left. I think five seconds left in the game. They kick a field goal to take the lead. And then if you recall, ironically, so they kick off to Illinois. Illinois fair catches the kickoff in return. So there's 5 seconds on the clock, and they try a desperation, you know, hook and ladder kind of a, you know, scenario at the end, pass the ball downfield, guy catches it, laterals it, and then one of the laterals ends up bouncing on the ground up to a Mississippi State player, and he returns it for, with no time remaining. So Mississippi State actually won by 10 points, but it was actually a 3-point game, you know, when the clock went to zero. So it was pretty interesting. But you're right. I mean, we've been fortunate. And I think part of that though, too, is that, you know, the teams we have in our games, you know, not only are they from great conferences, but when they come down to our game, they're playing on New Year's Day, they're hyped up for it. They're hyped up to play an opponent from the other conference, you know, bragging rights and all that. And they really come to play. And so they don't mail it in our game. These teams come to play. They play hard. They hit hard. They're there to win the game. And you know, typically that results in a very competitive game and a very exciting game.
Well, I think it's interesting because earlier in the first half hour of the show, when Roy was almost, we talked about, you know, what's happening in the Tampa area right now. And, of course, a little bit of a blot on what's happening is what happened with the two playoff games. 19,000 is the first game. And I don't have the official attendance for game number two. It was 19,704. But you've gained over the years, you said it's almost 30 years now, you've gained such tremendous support, not only from fans and buyers and sponsors, but from the community. I mean, this is really a, whether it's New Year's Day or whether it's the day after New Year's Day, depending on what pro football is going on that day, or it's a Sunday or what it is, this thing has really carried over with tremendous momentum.
Yeah, this will be our 38th year with the bowl game here in Tampa, and we're very proud of that. You're right. I mean, we've become a really part of the sports tradition here in Tampa. The Tampa Bay area, really the whole area, you know, has a very strong sports tradition that has been built up over the years with obviously our pro teams and you know, we have, you know, obviously the hockey team has won, you know, numerous Stanley Cups. The Rays have been in the World Series and in the playoffs quite a few times. The Bucks obviously have, you know, won multiple Super Bowls. And our area has hosted the national championship game. We've hosted the Final Four. We've hosted the Frozen Four. We've hosted the Super Bowl 5 times. So there's a lot of sports tradition here, so you know that's people that really love their sports in this marketplace, and I know the Rays. I wasn't able to see the game today or yesterday, but I know some people talking about the crowds and all that. But you know, I went to my family went to 3 Rays games this year, I think this summer, and every game. They drew well over 30,000 at those games. And I know their attendance was up about 500,000 this year over last year. So they are doing much better there. And they're finalizing plans for a new stadium, which I think will help their situation as long as they can keep, you know, staying competitive as well as they've been doing. So, you know, so I think we've got a great sports market here and we're proud to be a part of it.
Hey, Mike, Roger again, a couple of things. My point
was
earlier. Yeah. Okay, good. Well, you know, technology today, Mike, you know, what can I tell you?
A couple of
things. Number one, getting back to my original point. The NBA has been in that situation with the NCAA for years with, you know, you play 1 year or whatever the case might be, or no years like LeBron. But that's number one. Number two is just to follow up with Don's point. It takes a lot of people like you to make an endeavor as long as yours successful. Okay. People don't understand how much time it takes and the people involved. And but my point to follow up with you, I think that the Dawgs have played dog competition. I'm sorry to say that. And I mean, you know, when you're playing the ladies of Sisters of the Poor, they're going to get a big payday, okay, and you're going to get a win, but I don't think it does anything for your stature. You agree with mm-hmm. me with that or not?
Well, yeah, but I don't think that I don't think they played the Sisters this year, but they but yeah, I understand what you're getting at, but you know, most of the teams do that. Most of the teams, you know, start out with some teams, you know, some smaller level teams and so forth. And frankly, they do that to sort of, you know, get their team used to playing and so forth. I mean,
and get their six
not that
wins. Get their
that,
six
that
wins to get into
with.
A bowl.
Well, yeah. No, I'm not. I'm. Yeah, I mean, some do that, but I'm saying that, you know, the really good programs, they don't play a lot of those games. They play a couple. Everybody plays some non-conference games. I mean, that's, you know, going back to my college days, I remember too, though, you know, from the side that, you know, trying to schedule non-conference games a lot of times was really hard because you didn't know, because there were a lot of teams that didn't want to play you. You know, because, you know, you were, you know, they didn't want to get beat up by you. So, you know, it goes back to, I think, you know, with Georgia this year, I just don't think that they've been beat up. They've had some injuries. They lost a lot of good players over the last couple of years. And so, you know, they're trying to find themselves a little bit, and they're trying to reset, you know, their team a little bit and figure out what they got this year. And I think Alabama's has gone through that too a little bit, you know. I mean, you know, some of these teams, you know, you think about some of these teams, the Alabamas, the Ohio States, the world, you know, Michigan's, Penn State's, the big, big names, right? You know, when they're sending 12, 15 guys to the NFL year after year after year after year, okay, somewhere down the road, down the pipeline, you know, it's hard to reload and come out at the same level that you were the year before, right? I mean, you know, some teams have been able to do that. Alabama, we saw Alabama do that for about, you know, 5 or 6 years. But
right.
Everybody's going to
Georgia
have a
said
bit
12
of
last year. Didn't they? I think it was 12 Georgia
yeah.
said to the NFL.
Yeah. You know, somewhere along the way, you're going to have a year or so where your bench is, you know, the guys that are coming in to replace the other guys aren't quite as good as they were, right? And so you might have a little bit of a drop off, and fans don't always, you know, care. They don't care. They do care. They don't appreciate that situation, which puts so much pressure on these coaches and all that. But you know, it's like everybody goes through it. I mean, look at Florida State. How many years did they finish in the top five or whatever, you know,
right.
of the country? And then suddenly, for about 4 or 5 years, they were nowhere to be found. You know,
yeah.
And, you know, and again, that's a little bit unusual situation, but, you know, every team goes through that to some extent, the big name teams, you know, when they're just churning out guys and, you know, guys leaving early for the NFL or just playing NFL talent. I mean, even if they're all seniors, you know, you got a team that's out there and, you know, half your starters are NFL caliber players that go on to the NFL. And now you got to replace them next year with, you know, transfers or freshmen. You know, that's
right.
a hard thing to do. And again, you've seen situations, you know, the Clemsons, the Alabamas, on occasion where they could do that for a few years, but eventually it's going to catch up to them. And they're going to have maybe a couple years where they got to start building up that reservoir of that's not only the starters but behind the starters. You know what I mean? Because the difference between the teams like the Georgias, Alabamas in the last couple of years and those guys that have done so well every single year is that, you know, not only do they replace the guys, you know, who they lost from the previous year, but during the course of the year, when somebody goes down, they got another guy to come right in and fill that spot. I mean, Georgia, how many unbelievable running backs did they have the last 2 years for that team? And it just seems like they were just like popping them out of, you know, of a machine or something. They were just all, you know, they had 3, 4, or 5 running backs. And it's like one guy goes down, that's fine. We got 3 more over here, you know, next one up, you know. You know, this year doesn't look like maybe they have that depth, you know, kind of thing. So that's what I'm saying. You know, it's hard to maintain that level, that premium level from year after year after year no matter who you are.
Well, the running backs, Mike, you're exactly right. Look at even when Mark Rick was there, Nick Chubb. I mean, you know, there's a lot of – I mean, he got hurt this year. Yeah, I told Don this story because it was a young man I met whose father is originally from Philadelphia. And played at Forsyth Central near where I lived in Georgia. And he is at Penn. And I was telling Don, this shocked me. I went through the University of Pennsylvania roster. I could not believe the number of Georgia players that are on that roster at Penn, you know, which you wouldn't think for an Ivy League school. Now, this young man is a biology major pre-med, okay? So, but, I mean, I think that also says something about that here's an Ivy League school that's recruiting from Georgia, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
boys, we got to move along. But Mike, thank you very, very much. Kept you a little bit longer because Sonny had to drop out because of a technical problem. But thank you so much for being with us again. We'll catch up in the next couple of weeks, and as we continue toward the middle of the season and later in the season, it's going to become more compelling, and you're going to have more answers for us as we go along. Thank you very much.
Well, great to talk to you, Mike.
Always a pleasure to be with you guys and the talk football.
You got it.
So you guys have a great week. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the games, and we'll see you down the road.
Okay, take
care. Well, we've had three interesting guests so far, and it will continue because we haven't talked soccer in quite a long time because we were off the air for quite a few weeks, a little bit of a hiatus for everybody, and now we're back in conjunction with what's happening in the world of sports. And so we got, as we do each week, Ron is on with us the first. Then we had Sonny Hill, and then we have Mike Schulte. And I think we're going to talk soccer now, aren't we, Frank? I hope.
We're supposed to. Mike was supposed to call in about 10 minutes ago. I don't know what happened to him.
Well, the Phillies just scored. They took the lead, 1-0, and Schwarber got a double. But what was interesting is the Marlins runner that really got on because it could have been an error, but it was a tough catch for Pache out in the left field. I don't, you were probably watching it, Don Frank, but yeah, and then he got on, and Schwarber just drove him in. But Nola was able to pick that guy off trying to steal.
No, I saw him in the game this afternoon, in the Toronto game this afternoon. I can't imagine. They talked all year about the base running in Major League Baseball here, how poor it is, and how the fundamentals have just gone totally out the window. And here's a game this afternoon. Your team's down 2-0, and you got a runner on second base, and he gets picked off. I mean, it boggles your mind. You can't imagine what kind of baseball is this.
Yeah. What are they teaching? Exactly.
Yeah. And when Nola, the guy's running,
that wasn't
Nola standing
really
on the mound. He was midway between second and third, and Nola just turned around, threw the ball to third base. He was out by 40 feet.
Yeah. And if he had gone around to the left, it would have been closer. So,
hey guys, we're the guy that Don just asked for has arrived.
Oh, Mr. Simzak.
Mr. Simzak.
Well, I got a couple of questions for Mr. Simzak tonight.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Phillies are just
did not
Schwarzer just scored too. It's down 2-0 in favor of the Phillies right now. Schwarzer comes in on a base hit. But let's get to Mike. Mike,
no, we don't have Mike. It's Doug. Don, it's
outside
Doug.
Of the.
Oh, it's Doug.
What?
Don, Doug.
Oh, yeah. It's Doug.
Yes, it's Doug. Oh, Doug.
Our commander in chief is having a night tonight, boys.
Great.
No, I I had a lot of questions for Doug last week, but we didn't get to it. The Ryder Cup. Let's start with that. What a disgrace that was for the United States, Doug. And more importantly, the way the team was formalized, the criticism that they've gotten as players during the tournament itself. You're a PGA professional. You've been in the business all your life. You join us every week. What in the world is going on with something like this at professional golf?
Well, I would first start by saying this is the first Ryder Cup that I can remember that I didn't watch 1 second of.
Ooh,
you know,
really?
I don't know if it was me or what, but like I'm thinking, you know, they're going to show this, you know, live, and it's going to be, you know, I never found it on TV. I mean,
Or anything?
The live channels were 1 o'clock in the morning. It was on NBC at 1 o'clock in the morning, and then it was on later on in the morning too, like 6 or 7. And then it was on Peacock. They had to go over to Peacock.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I think that the whole setup of it was really kind of piss poor, and I never watched 1 second of it. I watched the opening ceremony, and that was it. I never watched 1 second of it. And I don't know if it just, you know, I think it just kind of turned me off, you know what I mean, that I felt like I should be able to watch it when I wanted to watch it, or at least live. You know, because, I mean, I'm up every day, you know, 5:30, whatever, and I'm flipping through channels thinking, all right, yeah, man, the Ryder Cup's on today. And I'm like, I can't find it. I don't know where it is. So I had my phone, and I was looking at the updates, and after, you know, it was, what, 6.5, 1.5, or whatever it was the first day, you know. It was just, I don't know. You know, I'm sure that
I got to agree with you. Not only that, but you couldn't tell who was playing half the time. I did watch it, but I got to tell you, it was not an entertaining television presentation. I'll tell you that.
Look, I'm certain that this came down the pike how many years ago when, you know, we decided we were going to form a Ryder Cup committee, and we were going to have, you know, different methods in which we were going to pick our team, and then obviously the captain gets his picks. But, you know, he kept sticking Spieth and Thomas out there together, and, you know, just he kept making, you know, in my opinion, the same mistakes and some of the pairings. And you know, the Ryder Cup is, you know, it's like when you watch an NHL playoff game, you get a hot goaltender, and all of a sudden everything changes, right? You get a team that probably should be where they are.
You got caddies fighting in the parking lot.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know,
this is incredible.
Once you get closer to the Ryder Cup, I mean, you want to make your captain's picks based on the players that are playing well at the time. You know, you don't want to look back and say, oh, well, we need some veteran leadership here. These guys have been in this thing before. Let's pick Spieth and let's pick Justin Thomas, or, you know, whatever. I don't know. I mean, the whole thing seemed, I don't know. I guess I was just turned off by the whole entire. And in my
well,
opinion,
Roger,
like,
we got Doug on here with two teams that are red hot, the Ravens and, of course, the Orioles. And we've been talking about the Orioles all year, so. Roger, I'll let you pick it up on the baseball side for a few minutes.
Tell you, Doug, the one thing this last week, but one of the great gentlemen and great baseball players of all time, and a hero of yours, Brooks Robinson, passing away. And then last night, before the Phillies game, they honored the passing of Tim Wakefield. I had no idea that he was a Roberto Clemente winner, you know, unless it's nearby, you don't know. But
sure.
I know, talk, you know, as a Baltimore Orioles lifer, you grew up, you know, probably after Robinson's career. But what a classy guy and what a great player.
Yeah, I think, you know, I can remember, I mean, vaguely remember, going to 33rd Street, Old Memorial Stadium, and, you know, my dad, probably my grandfather too, you know, likely took me to some of those games. And you're talking probably, late 70s. But, I mean, you know, I've met through the years of being a PGA professional and hosting different charity events, I mean, I've met Brooks Robinson a bunch of times at those mm-hmm. events. I've met him in sidebar events, whether he was just playing golf or not. I mean, I've met Al Bunbury, and, of course, my mom was a huge Boot Powell fan. I've met Eddie Murray. You know, all the guys that kind of, like, to me, like, I know exactly where I was when the Orioles won the World Series against the Phillies. You know, I was mm-hmm. I was sitting in the chair next to my grandfather at his house when Cal Ripken caught the last out of that World Series. And I remember that, you know.
I was in Channel 29 doing a post-game show. I remember where I was, too.
Right?
And I remember where I was, too, and I was driving back with our friend Frank Hillman from that first game in Baltimore, and you're listening to WBAL. The fans were all saying, mm-hmm. "Oh, the O's are going to get swept." Well, they swept. Mm-hmm. They didn't get swept. You know,
correct.
The next four games, 93.
Sure. So I mean, you got to understand that.
83. I'm sorry.
1983. As a Baltimore Oriole fan, I mean, we've had some good years. I mean, they were, the better years of the Orioles were previous to 1983. You know, that was pretty much a, you know, you're just, you know, bouncing around here. But think about the fact that Jim Palmer won his 20th game to solidify four 20-game winners on the same staff. You don't even see a 20-game winner in baseball anymore. They had four of them on their staff. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, you know, they – The Dodgers that they beat in the World Series, the Big Red Machine, you know, the Phillies. I mean, in my opinion, I just feel like Baltimore and the Orioles have always had a version of, and even the Ravens to that extent, have had a small chip on their shoulder. Because what really pains me is, you know, you look at the Orioles last year and they win 83 games. They weren't supposed to do that, right? Now
right.
all of a sudden, oh well, they're going to regress this year. They can't, you know. So we win 101 games,
right?
And now you're gonna hear all this about all the, you know, about the Orioles and how good they are, and you know, it's to me it sucks to hear that the Baltimore Orioles come out of some of these media people's mouths because they don't deserve to say it, you know. You know, because they're going to get
You were on the bandwagon early. I mean, you said we talked for the day of starting spring training and talked about some of the young players, starting with Henderson. It looks like he's going to be a real giant star down through the years. And but the day he made that strong move the second half of last year and then jumped right out of the gate to start this year, and you were concerned about, well, maybe they need one more starting pitcher to get to the top.
Yeah.
But they got there.
Yeah.
Yeah, number one seed.
It's like I said, I mean, the spotlight was not shining on the Baltimore Orioles, you know, at all. Now all of a sudden, everybody's poised to put the spotlight on them. Like, you know, oh, yeah, look at this gem I uncovered and found. Let's talk about the Baltimore. No. You don't deserve to do that. You know what I mean? You don't get that right. Right? So, it's going to be interesting. I mean, they played six games against the Texas Rangers this year, and they split. Good news is for Baltimore, I mean, Kyle Bradish is likely to be – he'll garner some Cy Young Award votes, and he should. His ERA was sub-3 this year. He's going to pitch game one, and I'm thinking that for Texas, since they had to play this three-game series, you're probably getting Texas's third or fourth best starters in – the first two games. So, I mean, I think that's somewhat of an advantage. Obviously, playing at home is a bit of an advantage. I'd like to think the rest is, but is it rest or is it rust? You know, those are you know, important kind of concepts for the Orioles to come out and play well. I'll be super excited to, you know, I already told my wife. I know how she is on pins and nails when Georgia plays. I said, you haven't seen nothing yet till the Orioles play in this one, because, I mean, was it 2014 was the last time I kind of gave a crap about the Orioles in terms of their postseason and what it meant to win and what that felt like. You know, when you're a fan and your team is – I mean, I love postseason baseball anyway, and to see mm-hmm. these stadiums packed and the whole entire crowd is just waiting to stand up and cheer and roar, and you hear that moment where – the crack of the bat and there's a double in the gap and the place goes crazy. Like, to me, it makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up to even think about it, you know, and to have that concept hopefully play out at, at Camden is super exciting to me. And in fact, I've always loved football season and watching any teams play, particularly the Ravens, clearly. But I'm all in on the Orioles. Like I haven't even really cared about football season to this point, to be honest with you, because of how well they've played this year. So can't wait.
Roger.
Oh, I agree. I'm really up about the O's and what would be a great situation for me would be to have the O's and the Phillies in the World Series.
Yeah.
And I think, Don, you'd be the same way.
Well,
I mean, I think
we were there when it happened before. I mean, it wasn't a good move necessarily for the Phillies, but we were there when it happened.
Well,
yeah.
The national media and the darling matchup would be obviously the Orioles and the Braves, you know, in terms of hopefully expecting. You know, we played the Braves 3 games and likely should have beaten them 2 out of 3, but it went the other way on,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, I think it was an implosion by the bullpen or walk-off or I don't know, I forget what it was. But, I mean, you know, again, I always revert back to the fact that, you know, you look at some of these teams that are remaining and you look at the Dodgers, you look at the Braves, you look at, we'll say Philadelphia, we'll say Houston. I mean, look at a lot of these teams that are left and you look at their payroll and then you look at the Orioles payroll.
Mm-hmm.
And then you tell me that baseball isn't broken and doesn't need some level of adjustment, because that's not fair. Because, you know, I'm going to take $20 and go buy me some dinner. You know what, Roger, you can have, You can have 10 bucks, right? You know, that's what you get for dinner. that doesn't, you know, I don't understand any of that, but whatever.
Well, it's so. Like the NFL, you know, has joint sharing, you know. Everything's
fair.
Divided
Everybody,
up. And, but
sure.
If you're a good marketer, then you make more money because it's what you invest, you know, yourself.
Yeah. Well, look what happened last week on Sunday night. Last Sunday night was... With what was her name? I can't remember what's the name of the girl that sang that thing going with.
Swifty.
Yeah, Swifty.
Yeah, Swifty.
You know, look what they were selling tickets for that game on Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so far over the price. Unbelievable.
That's the dumbest thing. I was. If you were anywhere near my house on that game, you would have heard me curse. Because that's the stupid. I mean, the media has spent more time talking about that dumb blank stuff than the football game. You know, and I'm like, can we just play football? I don't care. Like, it, you know, whatever. I mean,
they want the publicity. They're getting all the publicity and all the money. That's all, Doug. That's all they're interested in. And more money and the more publicity, they blow it up so she can come in and have a big show. And
I mean. You know, look, that's a completely different entity for me because I'd like to keep my private life private, you know. That's not how I live my life. But, you know, if they want to sell some more 87 jerseys, then have at it. I'm not buying one.
Well, you know what's interesting, Doug, and I know Don and Frank are aware of this. Travis Kelce and Jason Kelce are totally different in their personalities in many ways.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, Jason is a family man, got little kids,
yeah.
You know, does so much in the community.
Well, he probably likes to hunt and fish and good old country
exactly.
boy. And
yeah,
I mean, I get it.
And Travis is all show, you know, publicity.
Coach. Yeah, all kinds of
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, look, you know, people in this day and age think that they're their own brand. You know, you look at, you know, Tom Brady, TB12, you know, all the, you know, all these people, Rafael Nadal, all these guys have their own, you know, logos and stuff. You know what I mean? Like they think that they're, you know, their own brand, their own entity. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's got to be tough to put your finger on that kind of stuff when you're standing in the middle of a locker room with 52 other guys and you're all chasing the same thing. What makes you special? What makes you selfish to think that, you know, the rest of the world should care about your personal relationship, right? You know, is Taylor Swift going to sing a song about Travis Kelce when they break up? I mean, who cares, right? You know?
and that's probably 3 weeks down the road.
Right, sure. Exactly. Or so.
Well, how about the Ravens? Because unfortunately or fortunately, I guess he had won what 13 or 14 consecutive exhibition games and never lost one until this year. But it looks like he's got another pretty good team. His drafting, his signings, his team looks like it's going to be really competitive right up to the wire again.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, they put their money where their mouth was when they re-signed Lamar Jackson, and so goes Jackson, so goes the Ravens. I mean, it's really that simple. You know, we've had a history in recent time of dealing with significant injuries to vital players that produce. The last couple of weeks, you know, we were out left at starting. Ronnie Stanley was out. Tyler Lindenbaum was out. We've lost J.K. Dobbins for the season. Our starting free safety was out. We had Beckham was out. Bateman was out. We've dealt with Ajabo was out. Owe was out. I mean, you look at all the key position players that we've been missing the last couple weeks. We got really lucky.
Let me just interrupt for a second and say Real Muto just hit a home run for the Phillies.
Yeah.
So they're now up by a score of 3-0, and he hit one dead left field.
Sure.
No question it was going out.
I think the Ravens got really lucky that the Browns have a very good football team, extremely elite defense, and we were able to run the ball very well, and they started the rookie quarterback because Watson couldn't go. So that was a really big win, I think, for Baltimore, and I think they're gonna cruise into Pittsburgh this week. I don't know what the health status of Kenny Pickett is, but Matt Canada is their offensive coordinator, and he is not really good at his job. I think he's been their offensive coordinator a couple of years, and I think the Steelers are the only team in football that haven't amassed more than 400 total yards in a game more than twice or something. It was some statistic that I heard, but their defense is pretty elite as well with some of their pass rush with Watt and the back end of their safety with Fitzpatrick. But I think Harbaugh and his crew will come up with a scheme, and I think you'll see another smash mouth kind of football game with defensive prowess, and hopefully the Ravens can score just enough points to win that game, and that would be huge because that would be their third conference win, and a big deal early in the season.
Well, Blake Martindale's taking some heat now with the Giants, after I defended him when he left the Ravens.
He's taking a lot of heat.
The Giants are. I don't know what happened. I mean, every year you look around and you'll see, some daisies pop up where, gosh, I didn't think they were very good, and all of a sudden they surprise you, and then you'll see it go the other way. Gosh, they were a really good football team, and then all of a sudden they stink. Like the Giants just aren't really that good right now. I mean, they dealt with their own share of injuries, but Wink Martindale is a good football mind. It's not like he doesn't know what he's doing. But a lot of that's the scheme of the game that's played. I mean, when you're turning the football over and you're giving the other team a short field, of course your defense is going to suffer. When your special teams doesn't play well and you give that offense a short field, your defense is going to suffer. It's not all that cat's fault. I don't personally, when he was in Baltimore, he wasn't coordinator. So I didn't like his scheme pertaining to how much he blitzed and how much pressure he put on the back end of that secondary to cover. I think Baltimore's had more than their share of really, really good defensive core. I mean, I liked Rex Ryan. I liked Marvin, I'm talking about, I can't think of his name. Marvin Lewis?
Marvin Lewis, but then was the head coach for quite a while.
He was a prince. I met him a couple different times. He was a super nice guy. Loved how he schemed up the defense, won a Super Bowl. They've had their share of good guys. I mean, I liked Rex Ryan because he was so vocal and arrogant, in that sense, cocky. I loved how he, played his defensive schemes. And he's the kind of guy that if he's your coach, you love him. If he's not, you hate him.
Well, like his father.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, Don and I love Buddy. He would just be classic at press conferences. Yeah.
Sure.
The thing I can't understand, fellas, is this. We went through the baseball spring training, and New York has, and the New York Post, they must have 10 different writers every day writing their bets, writing everything. I mean, not one of them picked the Mets to have a problem. Not one of them picked the Yankees to have a problem. Not one of them has picked the Giants to have a problem. In fact, they went and talked about the defense being as good this year as the Buddy Ryan defense was in the Chicago Barrier. I mean, I don't know what these guys are looking at. I mean, what in the world?
Are you specifically, Don, talking about the New York media?
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's what you have to know. People from New York, especially like New York City, are some of the most arrogant cusses you'll ever meet in your entire life. You would have thought, Aaron Judge, you know, 60 Yankees, 27, well, who cares? We went to opening day, and there was a Yankee fan that sat behind us, and he was, you know, cussing up a storm because Clark Schmidt started opening day. And he's not one of our starters. We're hurt, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I turned around, I looked at the guy, and I said, are you kidding me? He's like, what are you talking about? And I was like, you have the highest payroll in baseball. You couldn't have spent another $50 or $60 million to buy another pitcher? And then he got all mad at me. He's like, oh, yeah, we'll see where the Orioles and the Yankees are at the end of the season. I'm like, okay, buddy. Yeah, we'll see. So I wish I could find that guy because he probably owes me at least a beer because the Yankees finished in last place, and that's the greatest thing that could ever happen. Then you look at the Jets. Oh, yeah, you know, we got Aaron Rodgers. We're going to win the Super Bowl. Oh, come on, man. Get real. What are you smoking? Can I have some of that? Because it'll make me feel really good.
We got to get out, boys. Doug, thanks for jumping in early. We'll get to you next weekend again. And thanks so much for your participation. Roger, it's all up to you.
Always great.
Our executive director, Frank Terrell, you got it.
Have a great week, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs have brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation. The men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please let them know that you know they're there. Make some kind of a gesture to them. Someone can deny anything like that. And we want to also just say this program is dedicated to Deputy Bob Carroll. Formerly with the Sarasota County Sheriff's Department.
Sing his praise as sweet drops play.
Proudly
talk to
Good night, Bob. We love you. We miss you.